and this is controversial material, so I want to get on with that now, on Franklin Roosevelt, Robinson Jefferson, to the part of what Roosevelt was doing. Now, as I say, one source on Roosevelt, and I have many, many books on him and on this time period, but I chose George Selde's books because he had a newsletter, in fact, that came out every week, just as I do World Watchers every week. And all of the things he said are dated, so you can put them into a time slot. So I went back to, in fact, June 30th, 1940. I'll give you the dates of the issues and give you some of the things he was saying when Jeffers was writing his poetry in the anti-Roosevelt poetry in 1942. He said, it has confidentially been revealed that America is going to fight. This is 1940, and Pearl Harbor came December 41. The United States is going to fight in Europe, in Asia also, a long war that will not necessarily result in a satisfactory peace, but it has been determined that the United States must be in Europe to lend weight to the American wishes with respect to the final settlement. The American wishes, meaning the American corporations, want us there when Russia defeats Germany against whatever wall they were going to line them up to before they said, I give up. And the decision was made that we must be there for any final settlement. Therefore, we have to send our troops. And he wrote that Western civilization, in quotes, and evidently this came out of some meeting, must be reserved. The U.S. troops in Europe will defend the system, he wrote, even after socialism or the Soviet communism takes over on some parts of the Europe. He said it is necessary that force of arms be supplemented by underwriting Europe for generations to come to stop socialism, which was the labor unions and communism. So we would be in Europe, and that was the Marshall Plan that was set up, or the British American Canadian Corporation with 800 corporations within 2 days of the end of the war that I've talked about. He wrote that anti-war spokesmen harshly objected to the plans that were being made in America because they had nothing to do with defending democracy, that the troops were being sent there to defend the status quo, and that the administration, they insisted, is only concerned with the status quo in England and France, which means the continuous suppression of labor, cancellation of civil rights, lowered standard of livings, dictatorship of the vested interest. Then he wrote, Franklin Roosevelt is anxious to reshuffle his cabinet. This is in 1940. And Franklin Roosevelt decided to make the Secretary of the Navy, that was Mr. Knox, and the Secretary of War, Republicans. Now, Herbert Hoover came in his presidency building up the rearmament of Germany and the Polish czarist that came out of the Russian czarist and the Polish very far right-wing group that came out from the Russian Revolution and were being put down. The czarist in Russia then had fled to Germany to help rearm Hitler and help him get going after they had to leave Russia when it became the Soviet Union. And what he's writing about is that it was, even though we had Herbert Hoover, whose whole goal is to rearm the American army for World War III, one of his primary goals with France and Great Britain, the President of the United States, Herbert Hoover, had his Republican choices made for Secretary of Navy and War. And Franklin Roosevelt said, I'll have a Democrat in the Labor Department, but we'll use the Republican Party in War and Navy. And they had been called in front of Congress for illegally rearming Hitler ever since the Versailles Treaty that President Wilson wanted to end wars. And then George Seldes wrote in his newsletter that some people in the United States felt that when Franklin Roosevelt merged the Democratic Party with the Republican Party, that coalition would kill the two-party system. And that is exactly when the two-party system ended and decisions of war and defense were bipartisan, as Ronald Reagan likes to call it, but the heads of both parties allow Vietnam and the horrors of South Korea or the coups in all the various countries, 30 or 40 of heads of states we've killed. Both parties are part and parcel of it. And starting with Franklin Roosevelt, his Secretary of War and those important posts of Navy and War were run by the Republicans. And then when John Kennedy was in, He did the same thing with Alan Dulles and Dean Rusk and McNamara, the same group that worked with the Republican administrations before when he was president. He put them in as part of his cabinet. So what George Zeldes is saying, that people in the Republican and Democratic Party feared that Franklin Roosevelt would kill the two-party system, and then it may leave open for a third party, which is the one we never had, that is truly anti-war, pro-peace, pro-labor, pro-social legislation and outlook. Those are the things that get the shaft, while the $40 trillion in the last 40 years went to war. And George Zeldes wrote about the fifth column. He described it as being a name given by Franklin Roosevelt to the Martin Dies Committee to advocates of peace, to break down advocates of peace and labor organizations and civil liberties. They became the new spies. Now, there was an interview in this same newsletter, 1940, called We Built the Nazi Air Power, from George Zeldes, that said the United States with Great Britain has been accused of aiding the Nazi military power before the war broke out. And this is 1940. In fact, his newsletter reprinted here, hearings from the Naval Affairs before the United States Senate on the nomination of William Knox to be Secretary of the Navy. Knox worked with Herbert Hoover and with the War Department, and Franklin Roosevelt made him Secretary of the Navy. And he was called to by a Senator Homer Bone in Washington about the rearming of Hitler going on from 1934 and 1935. This one hearing, but other hearings went back even earlier to 1922. And Bone said, I'm pointing in 1934 and 35. Hitler was supplied hundreds of the finest airplane engines manufactured in this country. And Colonel Knox, who's to become the Secretary of the Navy, said, I know they bought our engines, yes. Bone, they bought hundreds of them. Knox says, I saw them myself in Germany. I was there. Bone, they were sold through the Bavarian Motor Works. And Knox says, I saw the whole train load of them. I saw our engines in Hitler's Germany, and now he's the Secretary of the Navy to be. Not only that, they bought the patent rights, the building rights to the engines from the American manufacturers to the German government with the consent of the government. Is there any doubt in your mind about that? And he said, well, I didn't know about the consent of our government, but I know these engines were sold. And Representative Bones, as you're aware, under the Versailles Treaty, that Germany was forbidden to rearm in that fashion. He said, oh, yes, I was aware of it. But then I went to make sure in Germany to see what we were selling them. And he was appointed by Roosevelt to be Secretary of the Navy. Another part of Zeldes' newsletter of 1940, July 29th, is called U.S. Aids Hitler. High officials of the United States State Department betrayed democracy every day by refusing visas for non-political as well as anti-fascist refugees who up till 1940 were trying to leave foreign prison camps, particularly in France, when the League of American Writers requested the State Department to rescue noted writers in 1940 or earlier from Hitler's terror. It was turned down. The League learned that the American officials were putting severe pressure on Bolivia, Chile, and other countries to cancel their being able to travel to those countries. Our State Department was stopping them. But the State Department managed Lady Mendel of England to arrive by the Clipper. She arrived alone with two dogs on an overcrowded refugee ship. She came, but then many applicants were put aside because her dogs came later with a secretary, and Lady Mendel's dogs arrived. Writers from Europe couldn't come that were fighting fascism. In fact, August 12, 1940, George Zeldes writes, Americans armed Hitler and financed fascism. And it goes into the role of J.P. Morgan, and Franklin Roosevelt was very close to the Morgan group while he was president of the United States. The munitioners DuPont, Pratt & Whitney, Curtis Wright, Douglas. And he said the fascism is the same today as it was in 1925, 1930, 1939. We're up to 1940. The anti-fascist said years ago, fascism means war. Fascism is the aggressor. It eventually threatens American interests, but America is supplying them with guns and money. And we are besieged by fascists in our own State Department during now the Democratic regime, formerly the Republican machine. Nothing has stopped. And this article goes into J.P. Morgan as the chief backer of Mussolini's fascism and hoping that Hitler would win his aggression against Russia, and the use of Dillon. Mr. Dillon was head of J.P. Morgan. He was assistant to Bernard Baruch on the War Industries Board, and he was instrumental helping Dillon Reed send millions of dollars to Hitler. The biggest loans to German firms came, it listed one of $7 million from Germany and another $48 million from IG Farben. And then the American companies of the Dillon Reed also put in money, including J.P. Morgan made allowances for $30 million for Mussolini through a bank in Milan, and the $30 million. Then Seldes wrote in 1940, August 23rd, titled, Roosevelt Quits the Writers' League. For 2 years, Franklin Roosevelt, as the writer of several books, was known to 800 members of the League of American Writers as a colleague. The League never tried to gain publicity from Roosevelt's membership. 3 or 4 months ago, which would be in the summer of 1940, Roosevelt definitely abandoned the New Deal at that time when he resigned from the League. The League's chief activity was fighting fascism, Native American fascism that masquerades as super patriotism at home, and foreign brand of the Cliveden set in London and 200 French families. The League recently issued a statement on peace with 350 writers signing it, and well-known writers, and the League is investigating the people who were, you know, not allowed also to come to this country, but they listed these various writers, and then suddenly Franklin Roosevelt resigns and says, I am no longer a member of the Writers' League. Then, in fact, October 21st, 1940, Americans' real enemies, and it tells about another $15 million that was sent to Adolf Hitler by the United States government, and he said the FBI has a great record with kidnappers. Seldes was laughing about that, but it has fouled his nest by raiding the Spanish loyalist veterans. Neither Martin Dies, the FBI, nor Franklin Roosevelt made any investigation of the Friends of Hitler, Mussolini, and the real fifth column in the United States. Fascism in high places is allowed by the FBI and Franklin Roosevelt. But on the other hand, while money is being sent to Hitler and it's being used in the United States for red baiting, Seldes wrote, 7,000 American guns were sent to Hitler, going back further to 1923 to 33, directly to Hitler from Americans, not German Americans, from Americans, 7,000 Thompson machine guns were sent. There were only 21,000 of them made, and 7 went to Germany, and they were used for the brown shirts, that's the Freikorps, in capturing the streets of Munich and Berlin. That was the time period of 1922 to 33 that American guns were sent, and the Freikorps looked like a small group acting in terrorism on their own that were actually linked to their government and our government. And then he continues in this newsletter, October 21st, 1940, as early as December 22nd, 1922, Hitler was corresponding with Henry Ford. Ford had a picture of Hitler over his desk. Hitler had Henry Ford's over his, and Ford gave money to Nazi Germany, to Hitler. And I mentioned last week the obituary of Henry Ford II, how he was, the Ford Motor Company at one time was just about to go bankrupt, and he was, I believe, Yale University, and he got an exemption from going into the service by Franklin Roosevelt personally, so that he could keep the Ford Motor Company going, and they were the origin of the American anti-Semitism, the elders of the prodigal of Zion, and of course, George Seldes' newsletters are filled with that. Then he wrote in the same issue, November 4th, 1940, Roosevelt and the Money Bags, and he says, it was not until 1940 that the Americans, 10 million organized workers, liberals, and progressives, began to question Franklin Roosevelt's appeasement policies for big business, and big business, of course, was part of funding Hitler. Roosevelt was elected November 4th, 1933, and by 1940, 7 years later, the men claim that they have lost the presidency, that someone, the corporations, have bought the presidency, and according to Paul Ward, Roosevelt was, in quotes, laboring under the scenes to make peace with the giants of industry and finance, who are supposed to be the antagonists, and into the White House slipped those people from Chrysler, from Standard Oil, from U.S. Steel. those persons sending millions and millions of dollars, of course, over with approval of the American government to assist Adolf Hitler. And in 1980, a newsletter came out, George Seldes, about Roosevelt's turning against the labor unions and being angry at not he pretend to be progressive, but he was breaking up then the CIO, that was before the AFL-CIO, and Mr. Lewis, and he was destroying the labor unions. And what was worse, he was going along with Herbert Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, using the labor unions to develop spy catalogs on Americans who were part of picketing or referred to as union agitators. And in the newsletter of 1940, November 18th, titled FBI uses the FDR uses FBI against labor. This is what he wrote. Evidence of the fact that Franklin Roosevelt is now planning to smash the progressive labor movement is the secret activity of the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover, who once devoted himself again to kidnappers and later took on political affairs and is now attacking labor. And remember that some of you don't remember that J. Edgar Hoover was vice president of Interpol, the international police set up by Adolf Hitler, and he had to step out of there and take away the pictures of Hitler's hierarchy in the FBI office in the United States when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. Up to that time, our police and Adolf Hitler's police were simpatico and exchanged the operations known as Interpol. This article goes on. J. Edgar Hoover started a file of 5 million people back in, this is 1940, including practically all liberals and all progressives and intellectuals. And that's where Robinson Jeffers fits in with the intellectuals, the writers. We can be harsh at what he's saying now until we open the newspapers of what he was seeing when he was writing the poetry. And nobody can doubt the intellectual capacity of Robinson Jeffers. J. Edgar Hoover was putting a list on all liberals, progressives, intellectuals, nonconformists, as well as radicals. The G-men went to every strike. They went to every labor meeting. The activity of Roosevelt's FBI against labor was exposed by Mr. Ward, a Guild reporter, an organ of a union newspaper, who charged that the General Intelligence Division of the First World War, that allegedly disbanded in 1924 because of public indignation, has been revived. This is similar to Western Gold's allegedly the LAPD throwing material away they were supposed to destroy, and we found it in the files of Western Gold's going into the Defense Department in 1983, the $100,000 computer in a garage in Los Angeles in Long Beach, and files were never destroyed. They're passed on. And this person is reporting that files were supposed to be destroyed in 1924, but Herbert Hoover joined them again. He fingerprinted employees in war material plants. He claims he had, in 1940, 4,800,000 fingerprint cards that belonged to criminals. He identified the criminals as somebody who picketed, someone who agitated a union, or in one instance, J. Edgar Hoover, charged that Reds were threatening to close down American factories and air plants would be a danger to the war. And this continues with the tacit approval of Franklin Roosevelt of what J. Edgar Hoover was doing in this time period. Another story about General Motors, a liaison in Europe to Germany. His name is James Mooney, the liaison officer of the United States Defense Department in 1940. It's titled, Mooney Keeps His Nazi Medals. And George Seldes writes, General Motors apparently is flooding a nation with mimeographed defense of its overseas president, James Mooney, the liaison officer to the U.S. Defense Department, who holds Hitler's swastika decoration. It was given to foreign and distinguished persons in the business field, such as Mr. Watson of IBM and Mr. Ford of Ford Motor Company. And Mr. Mooney wears this decoration. He said he can't break with Hitler. This is 1940. He still hopes to salvage his Opel auto plant, which for years was making war material. And Mr. Knudsen, Mooney, General Motors, and stockholders made millions of dollars from Hitler's war preparations in making these weapons. And they did not denounce Hitler. And this article tells how the head of General Motors wears his Nazi emblem Well, he worked for the United States Defense Department. Now, the part that merges the period of Allen Dulles with the OSS and William Stevenson is written about in great length in George Selde's documents about England and the mentality of the Great Britons just before they sent William Stevenson over to shape our thinking, because we would be in Europe to shape Europe after the war for the particular multinational corporations or banks. It had nothing to do with democracy. It had with keeping the status quo. That's why these people died in those fields, 80 million of them, so that these people who didn't die could hold on to their wealth. And that's what will happen in the Persian Gulf, to make it timely and think about who gets knocked out there. And the same directors of this game or this drama sit back and watch it unfold. In fact, January 13th, 1941, he reprinted a report, 108-page report, written by our ambassador to Great Britain, Joseph Kennedy, who was then removed as ambassador because J. Edgar Hoover said that he was too pro-Nazi. Joseph Kennedy was so Nazi that it would give America a bad name. But before he left the State Department, he wrote a report that said, England is proceeding rapidly towards fascism and the Nazi model, that fascism cannot be sold to the British people without the enthusiastic support of the Minister of Labor, Ernest Bevin. That's all they had to get over, was the enthusiastic support of labor, and they'd be home free, and that the people, the working people, are paying for the war while the government makes great concessions to the industrialists, the munition makers, and the big businessmen. Now, if you don't think that applies today, just buy New Fortune magazine and Forbes magazine and see the new billionaires, the new many billions, over billions, and realize their relationship to the defense industry. And Joe Kennedy wrote a report about the mindset of Great Britain. Another article he wrote in 1941, General and Admirals Prepare to Fight Fascism. That was the motto that Jeffers was so skeptical of, while they wear decorations awarded to them by Mussolini. And he writes, one of the real differences between Woodrow Wilson's road to war in 1914 and 1917, Wilson again, and the Roosevelt road to war in 1939 to date, is that the general public in Wilson's time did not know what was happening. Whereas today, and he's saying 1941, it is publicly announced that the president is waiting for public opinion to swing into line for convoys and eventually for the bloodshed as part of the war. And doesn't this sound like us? And they're waiting for the approval of both parts of the Congress to get us into the Gulf, where we are reflagged, ready for this confrontation. And this article goes into the leading Democrats who are now working for the government or the Defense Department, who are propagandizing for convoys and intervention, preparing to lead the American Army and Navy into what they call a war of democracy, and scores of those people openly support Nazism, fascism ideology, the programs of the Nazis, the aims of the Nazis, and they are possessed of the same mentality of the Nazis as they go into the war. The leading recipients of the swastika medal from Hitler are well known, such as Henry Ford, Mooney of General Motors, Thomas Watson of IBM, Colonel Lindbergh, who got his after reviewing the Nazi Air Force and telling the British that Hitler would defeat them. Ford, Mooney, and Watson got theirs as distinguished foreigners who deserved well of the Reich. Mussolini's highest award to Americans, the Grand Cordon of the Crown of Italy, was given to Claude Swanson, Secretary of the Navy, to Admiral Stanley, and to General Douglas MacArthur, at the time that he was Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army. And Douglas MacArthur had his Chief of Intelligence, Mr. Charles Willoughby, otherwise known as Kurt Wiedenbach, from Germany, who attended Hitler's Krieg Academy with Albert Wiedemeyer to get ready for the Nazification of the United States when the war was over. As Selde saw, and people wrote up in 1940s, we would dabble into Europe to make sure we were there so that those vested interests of the United States and Britain or France or whatever would share in the piecing together to keep the steel and the thing that they manufactured there, whatever it was they grew or manufactured in the hands and control of us. The Marshall Plan would bring in the money to rebuild these plans. And the reason the OSS hired the Waffen-SS was to smash the labor organizers, the resistance people, the anti-war people, the same people that Franklin Roosevelt was using J. Edgar Hoover for to make lists on, the intellectuals, the labor movement, and so forth. And then George Seldes has a long section about the truth of Rudolf Hess and his friends and about an organization called the Fellowship and the link of a fellowship to American organizations such as Lazard Brothers, the Vickers Munitions, Thomas Cook, the Lever Brothers, and Hitler's organizations, and the American corporations and British corporations, the Cliveden set, that all merged together. And that is a little bit of overview of why Robinson Jeffers wrote what he wrote and why he felt like he felt, because he was a product of his time. If George Seldes was writing about these things, Robinson Jeffers was seeing them too, and he was seeing the hypocrisy, the way we were led into these situations, arming from 1922 to 23, and then all of a sudden declaring Hitler the bad man. And of course, Robinson Jeffers lived, was educated in Greece and studied Latin and Greek and lived in Switzerland and went to schools there in England and Scotland and lived in Europe a very long time before he settled in Carmel and watched this world practically blow itself up, and he knew, this was written before the end of World War II, that we would begin embroiled in a war again for the same excuses, the very same excuses that were used from the time of the Greeks and the Romans and Napoleon and all the wars. He knew the sound, the voices, the speeches, and where it would lead. Well, now I'm going to conclude this part of World Watchers by thanking Coast Components. It's 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you the past hour, World Watchers. The previous hour, World Watchers, was also made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For information, call 438-7400. We'll take a 1 or 2 minute break, and then I'll be back with you for the second half of the program.